Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz, episode 38 for August 29th, 2008. Asterisk. Floss Weekly is brought to you by Visa. With every purchase, Visa prevents, detects, and resolves online fraud. Safe, secure, Visa. It's time for Floss Weekly. Weekly! Yes, weekly, ladies and gentlemen. As in every 7 days, I'm Leo Laporte. Randall Schwartz is here, Pearl programmer extraordinaire. Now a big fan of Squeak and Seaside. And a guy who really you want to have on your side when it comes to open source. Hi, Randall.
Hey, Leo. Good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you again.
It's been so long. It's only been a week. I can't believe this.
Well, I'll give you a report on our Laconica. That was a great one last week. And I'll give you a little report on how that Twit army is going. But I invite everybody to join us. It's the install works. Twit. Mm-hmm. Army.twit.tv if you'd like to join us on our
new... A name I came up with, by the way.
Was that you?
Yes.
Yeah, and Evan really said, oh, you've got to make it army.twit.tv, not twit.tv/army. So I did that. There was a little pain involved in doing that because Plesk, mm-hmm. gosh, I hate Plesk. I hate control panels. You know, I'm used to doing it bare to the bone, you know, doing your own Apache configuration. These control mm-hmm. panels just get in the way. And so it was doing something behind the scenes. I had no idea what it was up to. But mm-hmm. we finally got it working, and 2,076 users, and just having a blast. So what can I install today?
So today's show, I have got to say, is going to be a really killer one. I believe so. I've been working probably for about 3 months to schedule our guest. I actually had him like firmly in the slot, and then different things would happen. Either I found out you were going to be out of town, or I ended up having to go out of town, or he's canceled a couple of times. And of course, I'm working through a PR firm because he's a big company, so it's kind of gets in the way sometimes with like three levels of interaction. We'll check your calendar and let you know back. But I've got to say, today is great. Today we have on Mark Spencer of Digium, who is best known for having created the Asterisk software. Now, Asterisk is software, from what I understand, that puts makes it so you can connect your phone systems, like in a small office or a large office, or all the way up to huge installations, from what I understand, to connect them like to each other and out to the internet and out to normal phones and so on. And we'll probably get into a whole lot of details about that. Hopefully he'll be able to explain some of this stuff for us. I know it's all acronyms to me at this point. So.
Right. Yeah, you know, you may not know the name Digium, but I think pretty much anybody who's been following open source knows about Asterisk, because it must be one of the most successful open source projects out there. Hey, before we talk to Mark Spencer, you're gonna be happy about this. I got to interrupt the show for a little bit here.
Okay, I'm listening.
You're listening? You're all ears? Mm-hmm. I'm just going to ask you a trivia question, okay?
Okay.
When you go shopping online, uh-huh. and you're presented with a variety of different ways to pay... Uh-huh. What is the way of paying that you use to guarantee that you will be safe and secure?
Food stamps.
No.
Visa.
Yes, you're right. Visa, baby. Visa, this show is brought to you by Visa. When you go shopping online, they just want to remind you, when you buy something with Visa, they stand behind you. They use the most sophisticated technology available to detect, to prevent, and really to respond to online fraud. And that's important. When you're online and you're buying something, the quicker, the faster they can find the problem, the faster they can respond, the better. And Visa is so good at that. Basically, they want you to know, zero liability. You're simply not responsible for unauthorized purchases on your Visa card. They validate, they verify, they make sure the merchants are good, and when they're not, they don't stand behind the merchant, they stand behind you. You are the most important part of their business. That's why you can shop with peace of mind when you use your Visa card. Safe, secure, Visa. That's all I got to say. Safe, secure, Visa. Now, let's say hello to Mr. Mark Spencer. Mark, are you in Toronto?
I'm in Huntsville, Alabama.
Is that where? Because we had breakfast in Toronto, but that was just because you were up for the conference.
That's right.
Okay, so Huntsville's your normal home.
That's correct.
Is that where Digium is located?
Well, it's where our headquarters is. We actually have an main headquarters is here in Huntsville. We have a satellite development office in San Diego, and then a handful of people scattered all around.
So Digium is kind of the commercial side of Asterisk, is that it?
Well, we sort of have two missions. One is as the benevolent sponsor and maintainer of Asterisk, and one is the sort of commercial for-profit entity designed to help businesses basically make money and monetize Asterisk in different ways.
So not businesses use Asterisk, but other businesses that are going to do Asterisk installations, kind of, that kind of thing?
Well, we help basically anybody that wants to be able to utilize the technology in a commercial environment to
do so. Oh, okay. So it could be a variety. It could be an end user. It could be somebody who's going to do installations. It could be a variety of different things.
Exactly. And then we have a bunch of different products from interface cards to small PBX systems, sort of all already assembled, all the way to training and stuff like that. So it's, you know, subscriptions for the software. We have licensing services, certification services, everything sort of around Asterisk.
Tell me how Asterisk got started. Was it your project originally?
Yeah, it's actually kind of a funny story. So the company that is now Digium started life as Linux Support Services, which was basically a little company I put together about a year before I graduated college, with the purpose of providing Linux tech support. And it was absolutely one of those started not so much in a garage, but in an office in a computer store in Auburn, Alabama. And like most students, I didn't have any money. So I just sort of, you know, put my own website together and put my own computer together. And among other things, said, well, I'm going to have to put my own phone system together because, you know, I can't afford to go get one.
Right.
Eventually, so I realized that the phone system was actually way more interesting than the rest of the tech support business was, and might as well go focus on that.
There's a lot to doing what Asterisk does, because you, unlike a lot of software you interface with hardware, is a lot about hardware. It's also a lot about protocols that are complex and run by other people. I mean, must have been a fairly complex project.
Yeah, it really was, and that's part of the reason why making it open source was so critical to its success, is because, you know, if Asterisk did 80% of what somebody wanted, you know, in the early days, then they could add the remaining pieces to make it what they wanted, and, you know, now if it's 99.9% of what you want, you can add that last little 0.1%, you know, it's much easier now than it used to be. But it's because it's open source and because it was so powerful. It's like, you know, there was this total dearth of anything open source in telecom. And telecom was a market that was really, really ripe for it. And so, you know, as soon as there was something there, then it really helped, you know, people really got behind it and were able to really make it do a lot pretty quickly.
Now, what was your background at that point? Were you already a hardware geek or a software geek? How much did you have to learn to even start working on what eventually became Asterisk?
Oh, well, that's a good question. So I had the entirety of my extent in telecom was that I had been a co-op student at Adtran, which is another telecommunications company, actually primarily on the data side. They do have a number of voice products as well. But essentially, I didn't know anything about PBXs. I'd never used a PBX by anybody. And so I developed Asterisk like you would develop, you know, Apache or something like that. It looks like an application, a Linux application, not like a traditional phone system. And so you might say I didn't have any background in telecom, appreciable background in telecom, and that's why Asterisk started out the way that it did, and why Historically, I would say the Linux geeks have had more capability to utilize Asterisk than the telephony geeks have. And it's sort of more recently that we have gone out and said, all right, we're going to take Asterisk and package it up with, you know, SwitchVox, for example, and some of our other appliances to make it look like a more traditional telecom product. So that the channels that are used to selling, you know, NECs and Panasonics and stuff like that actually have something that they know how to sell.
So when you started, though, were you a programmer? I mean, or did you have
In fact, the project that may arguably still be more famous than Asterisk that I started was, now it's called Pigeon. It was originally called Game.
Game, that's right. Yeah. So that was that, your project originally?
Yeah. That started out. I probably worked on that for 3 to 6 months initially.
And so then, Game's the open source multi-client instant messenger, and after AOL said you can't call it Game, they changed it to Pigeon.
So that's GAIM, Game, not GAME. I was a little confused there for a second.
Yeah, GAIM. Yeah.
Okay. So you started on that, obviously, then you knew about networking protocol and about parallel processes and parallel TCP connections thing from looking at Game. Was that experience valuable then as you went forward?
Well, Asterisk was a completely different project from Game and actually born of a completely different need. The need for why I started Game, ironically, is because I'd never written a GUI application on Linux. And so I decided, well, I need to write something. What'll I do? And I thought, well, there's not really any good instant messaging programs, which at the time there really weren't. I'll just make an instant messaging program for Linux. And that's where Game started out from.
Did you use Qt, GTK? What library?
I used GTK, which is really funny because for the longest time, I ran KDE pretty much exclusively and developed any application I developed in GTK, which was just really bizarre.
Which is normally the GNOME GUI, and I guess KDE uses Qt, right?
Yes. Yeah. And largely that's because I have a rather strong distaste for C++.
as would any sensible person.
Yes.
Right.
So Asterisk is in C. What's it in?
It's in C.
Pure C.
Yeah.
ANSI C, as we call it.
Well, there are little bits and pieces of GCC specific stuff in certain places. I don't know that it will compile under any other compiler other than GCC.
Right.
But essentially, it's all in C. There, you can make C++ modules for Asterisk, and you can certainly interface to Asterisk using AGI with any number of languages from Ruby to Perl to Java, even .NET, believe it or not.
You know, I just slapped myself on the forehead, Randall.
Yes.
I mean, we've kind of talked about what Asterisk is, but maybe we should really ask Mark, because there are probably some people listening and go, okay, great. He does what? It's a punctuation program? What does Asterisk do, Mark?
I was just about to get to there.
All right. Well, Asterisk is an open source telephony platform. Most people think of it as an open source PBX, which is really sort of how it started life. But even from the beginning, you know, I guess for better or for worse, I rarely think small, and I really was hoping that Asterisk was going to fulfill its name and represent sort of the everything of telephony. And so now what we see is, of course, Asterisk does all the stuff that your PBX does. It handles extensions and voicemail and conferencing and interfacing to the public telephone network and voice over IP and all this other stuff. But it also is increasingly a platform upon which people are developing or deploying other applications that need access to telephony. So, for example, a good classic example would be Unwired Buyer, which uses Asterisk to telephony-enable eBay so that you can participate in your eBay auctions from your phone.
Wow, that's very cool. And of course, eBay has this other VoIP client called Skype, something like that.
Yeah.
Which you've
got me using here for this call.
I'm forcing you to use Skype. You prefer SIP clients?
Actually, being an Asterisk guy, I'm actually pretty agnostic to technology.
That's one of the nice things about Asterisk. It's really Well, when you say PBX, it's a switchboard. It allows you to plug one thing into one side, another thing in another side, and it's amazing the variety of things you can plug in on either side.
Right. So that's one of the things that's very pragmatic about Asterisk is that it talks to both the new technologies and sort of the old technologies. And its ability to sort of bridge those two worlds and provide a common set of applications on top of that means you can not only have a conference bridge that has people calling in from all kinds of different technologies, all participating in the same bridge, but you can even develop your own application, and that application can work with SIP, or it could work with somebody calling in over an analog phone line, or whatever other technology you want to bring into Asterisk.
So one place this would fit in, just so, again, more of our audience can follow along what's going on, this might be used for, say, a small office, home office, a Soho situation where you've got maybe you've bought two or three analog lines from the phone company, the traditional switch network, and you have maybe three or four people sitting at PCs, and you want to somehow have, like, they have people with their PC headsets being able to call out on these analog phone lines. Is that, and yeah. You put this in the middle of that.
Yeah, that's one very common application of Asterisk. In fact, we build an appliance called the AA50, which is about the size of a home router that runs Asterisk in Linux and can do all that sort of for you. You know, from a technology perspective, Asterisk provides all of that, and from a channel perspective of how you get the product, that's something. Where you can, you know, if you're a Linux geek yourself, you can obviously go download it off of our website and install it, get it up and running. Or we also sell devices that have all the software kind of pre-installed on it. So you don't have to, you know, build it yourself. So it just depends on the person. Most people tend to buy, most end customers tend to buy their phone systems from people who specialize in phone systems. And so that's a big part of what we've been doing now, is transitioning from just supporting the people who are the do-it-yourselfers, which personally I think are some of the most fun to be able to work with, to being able to support the broader market as well.
Now, in the scenario I just mentioned, I've said that the outward interface was, you know, traditional analog lines that you're buying from the phone company, but there are solutions that involve higher quality lines. In fact, you know, IP traffic actually on the back end of that too, right?
Yeah, you can do really any kind of telephony channel that you can dream of, from analog to PRI to SS7 links, just really any way you can imagine to get a call, pretty much you can get into Asterisk.
Wow. And that would also work for inbound kind of calls, too, like if you wanted to run a call center or something.
Right. Inbound and outbound. And one of the things that people do sometimes is to use Asterisk to mix those technologies. So maybe they have an existing PBX and they want it to be able to talk with Skype. And then maybe they want to play around with something with SIP, or, you know, who knows what it is, but they want to bring all that together. That's something you can do with Asterisk.
Maybe because we got such a great expert in this subject, we could just, I hate to do this to you, Mark, but kind of, can you teach us a little bit about telephony? Because this is very, very complicated. We understand, I think all of us VoIP, the idea of using your broadband connection to make calls. We use Skype often, which is a proprietary protocol, both the way it makes connections and the way it carries the audio are proprietary. There are other choices, though.
Right. There's all kinds of different choices, and each one sort of has its own set of benefits and drawbacks. And again, our goal with Asterisk is to sort of bring them all together, so you don't really have to worry about how any of them internally works. Right. You just decide which one you want to use.
So you could use a Skype client with Asterisk, or you could use something like Gizmo, which is a more of a SIP client. What is SIP?
SIP, wow. SIP is, let me call it an effort to standardize the way voice over IP calls are made.
So that they can interoperate, because right now you can call Skype with Skype. You can't do, you know, you're stuck in this Skype universe.
That's correct, yeah. And with SIP, in principle, you can call from any SIP device to any other SIP device. In the early days, that was absolutely pure fantasy. Uh-huh. And these days, it's very close to reality, at least for your typical voice call setup.
Has Asterisk helped with that at all? Is it because it's so prevalent and not being another vendor's? I mean, like having multiple vendors trying to implement it SIP, has that helped it standardize a bit?
Well, it's funny because now people are building standards on top of SIP. So, for example, there's SIP Connect, which is sort of a standardization of which options within SIP you use. Uh-huh. So I guess the biggest advantage of Asterisk has is because it's open source, pretty much nobody would release a product that didn't already interoperate with Asterisk. So pretty much any SIP device you find is going to work with Asterisk because it's something that's easy to download and test your product with. So in practice, everybody tests with Asterisk. Plus, it's the most popular endpoint for SIP trunks.
Yeah, so you're really the market like definer.
Yeah, exactly. Mark was being a little humble, because it really, if it doesn't work with Asterisk, forget it. You know, you've got to work with Asterisk. That's the baseline.
Yeah, that's pretty much the baseline. So that has helped. But the biggest issue with SIP has been, and this is maybe getting off on a tangent, but, you know, back in the olden days, right, like when DNS was being standardized, someone did an implementation and then sort of described what they did, which meant that they got all the bugs worked out in the implementation phase, and then you had a standard that was written based on something that already worked, more or less. Now, with SIP, what you have is you have some people writing standards, largely who weren't telephony people, and then trying to go back and fix in the standards all the things that they found to be problems when they actually tried to implement what they thought they were going to do. And so the result is that there, and this is a year ago, there were over 4,000 pages of documents about how you implement SIP, right? And that's, you know, there's a lot to it to get something like that implemented. And we're really talking about, you know, making a phone call for what most people care about. SIP is a much grander protocol than just setting up phone calls. But for people that just really kind of want to make a phone call work, it's way, way overkill. And it's had a lot of issues with firewalls and stuff like that. And it's just now kind of getting those kinks worked out. And frankly, I think that's one of the reasons why Skype has been so tremendously successful. Right. I mean, the reason people use Skype is because they download it. It's free and it works and it sounds good. And it's, you know, because it's a closed system, the guys doing Skype just, you know, solved all these problems about encryption and interoperability and high quality audio and all that kind of stuff, because they had complete control over it and they didn't have to deal with any of the backwards compatibility with anybody else.
Sure.
So, in fact, I kind of call that the lesson of Skype, which is that your average consumer doesn't care about open source or open standards or any of that other stuff. And all that other stuff is only as powerful as its ability to make a difference in what the consumer does care about, which is cost, performance, and ease of use.
But by having open standards, when Asterisk does have, you know, open standards, open interoperability, SIP and other protocols, it means, for example, that going back to my, you know, small office, home office situation, I could contract with some broker out there to take an IP call and then drop that down onto the public switch network to actually call a real phone somewhere.
Absolutely.
Like Vonage does or something.
Yeah, there are lots of people that offer SIP trunking services. So that's something very very easy to do. And really, you can completely make your decision about how you want to send it. Maybe you want to send it over IP, but if your IP link is down, you want to send it over analog.
Wow.
You know, and you can put it all together.
And I also understand, do you have a special thing, I forget what the name of it is, Druid or Guide or something like that, where if I'm calling a landline phone number, but my Asterisk boss can discover that there's a IP way to get there because there's this massive interchange of locating phone numbers?
Dundee, there we go. Dundee is a peer-to-peer setup for being able to resolve numbers. There's also a variety of networks using Enum, which is basically a DNS-based system. for being able to do that. And you can participate in some of those networks and be able to do sort of toll bypass in those ways as well.
But ultimately, that would mean that I could give you my like normal PSTN phone number, my normal like a real phone number, and you could call me, and it might never actually hit the real switch network then.
Right, right. That's the idea, right? The challenges with stuff like those, you know, federated peer-to-peer setups, largely have to do with the fact that people don't really make money in them; people save money with them.
Yes.
And so the result is that you've got too many companies out there that make a lot of money by other methods. Therefore, they have a lot of marketing dollars to spend, and it's hard to get people really excited about a technology that might save a whole bunch of people like 20 or 30 bucks a year. That makes sense.
Right. Now I have this sort of philosophical question, and you being big in VoIP, it might help me understand. I mean, ultimately, IP traffic goes over connections from one, you know, call center to another, and so does voice traffic. So if the packets going back and forth are on the same kinds of wires, why do we save money by putting it all inside IP traffic? Why shouldn't it be just the same way from just any phone to any phone?
Well, there's a couple of different things. One is there is some efficiency difference over the wire,
okay,
associated with running packet voice, right? Particularly compressed packet voice versus running uncompressed switched voice, in which you've got to literally dedicate the bandwidth all throughout the entire network for the duration of that call, which is how the traditional phone network works. So in one case, you have dedicated bandwidth. In another case, you've just got a bunch of packets that you're mixing up with other people's packets and sending them down the road. And it's a, you know, best effort kind of thing for the most part. Mm-hmm. So there is some economy of savings there. And frankly, the rest of it is just how the whole systems are built and billed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people bill phone calls typically by the minute on the PSTN, but you don't pay for your bandwidth in that way. You pay for a best service, you know, or a best effort service for your data network that is either metered or unmetered at a particular rate, but you typically are not going to pay by the megabyte for what you download.
No. So the real reason is that there's two different pricing models. One is the pipe's always on and I'm just sending stuff through a maximum size. And the other is I'm paying per the minute for the connection, and different models work better for different things. And the traditional phone company has charged us by the minute because that made sense.
Right. And that's also the way a lot of the, you know, historical regulation around phone service is really set up. So, you know, there are a lot of questions. The technology is advancing faster than the policy is about how these things kind of come together. So what does it mean now to be a phone company? I mean, I can be essentially a voice over IP provider with nothing more than a hosted account somewhere, because mm-hmm. I can buy trunking, and then I can set up asterisk on my little server that's out there with all those SIP trunks out to the real world and mm-hmm. go sell people accounts. Well, does that make me a phone company and subject to all the regulations of you know, what would normally be associated with being a phone company? You know, those are all questions that are, you know, kind of hard to answer.
Do you think that if phones didn't exist today, do you think that the phone company would start and be more of a pricing model like IP traffic somehow? I don't know if that makes any sense, but, you know, like if we started today, maybe I'm not making any sense.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that question. It's hard to think about, well, you know, if phones didn't exist, how would we have even gotten to the point of the internet? At some point going, you know, it'd be interesting if we actually carried voice across.
I think, frankly, the you know, the internet providers are trying to get out of this flat fee model. It's the last thing they want. They regret having gotten in the first place. Everybody wants everybody would love to meter if they can.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing is, you know, you get so much of the reason why it is what it is based on that. It's like a lot of people asked this question about, well, you know, do you realize how much money you could have made if Asterisk wasn't open source?
No.
It's like, well, no, because Asterisk wouldn't have been successful if it hadn't been open source, right? The reason so many people use Asterisk is because it's open source, directly or indirectly, you know?
Is there any commercial project that does the same thing as Asterisk, any commercial product?
No, I mean, you'd have to be out of your mind to even try.
Why?
I mean, because you can't build a business around the idea that you're going to build a product which does everything, right? Can you see the business plan for – what are you developing? Oh, I'm developing a telecommunications product that provides every function and talks every protocol to everybody switch.
Right. Forget it. You
know, who's going to – how? And who's your market? Oh, everybody. is that small business? Yeah, or is that carrier? Yes. Yeah,
that's everything.
It. Everybody.
Everybody.
Everything for everybody. Yeah. That is not a business you can go after, but as an open source project, I mean, it's still hard as an open source project even to keep up with the flow of all the patches and technologies, but it's at least can be accomplished. In fact, one of the hardest things even for Digium is that we have so many opportunities that are presented to us, and as a company, we kind of have to start somewhere. So we have to say, okay, this is a business that we're going to try to really aggressively go after, and everything else, it's really got to be a compelling argument for why we would accept that distraction from a you know, stepping core business.
When you started, was your idea, like, from day one to have it be open source?
Yes, but it was mainly because I had done open source. I did game. Mm-hmm. I did a project. In fact, the reason I stopped working on game was to start another project called Keops that I thought was going to be huge, and like nobody's heard of it practically.
What was Keops? And, what was it?
It was a network discovery tool. So like it would go out and find all the computers on your network and identify their OS and put up little icons, and you could, you know, hit Control M and it would map how they were all connected.
Oh, I like
together.
It. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
It was a really cool, cool app.
Kind of like OpenView or something like that.
A little bit like that. You could, you know, you could right click on it and it would port scan it and show you the ports, and you could, you know, SSH to it or web browser to whatever.
Oh,
it was.
I love that.
So it was really powerful. Especially before there were firewalls.
And then, then it went boom. you can't talk to anybody anytime.
then it was very different. I mean, you used to be able to just go out, you could scan whole enterprises with it. In fact, if you want to read about it, there's a book called Hacking Exposed, which has a whole chapter about Keops.
Oh, I have that book. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it mentions it in there, but it really never took off like I thought it was going to take off, because I thought it was just the coolest thing and nobody had anything that was like it. And you know, I got it fairly well developed, but I could never get anybody interested in maintaining it and taking the project.
I bet open source is like that, where you just don't know. You can't predict.
It's hard to predict. Now, there are characteristics I think I've identified that will help you determine how likely the project is to be able to get
legs. Oh, really?
Legs.
Like what?
Well, all right. So let's start with the size of the market, right? So one factor is the size of the market. The bigger it is, obviously, the more likely it is you're going to find people that will be able to help out or have enough interest.
Of course, Asterisk had the perfect size of the market. It was everybody.
Yeah.
So it's a good start. Okay.
Right. Okay. Secondly, there is... what percentage of the user base is capable of actually contributing to the project? Okay, so as an example, much higher percentage of users of GCC can contribute to a compiler than users of Pigeon can contribute to Pigeon.
That's why you get a lot of infrastructure projects in open source. Yeah, makes sense.
Exactly, because people, you know, those tend to attract the more technical people. Right. There's also, I think that some aspect of open source is motivated by cost savings, right? So open office is a big cost saving thing versus, you know, Firefox versus IE.
Right.
You know, a lot of people just don't care. But if you go to them and you say, well, you know, you can save $500 by installing this other application instead of Office, you might get some more people's attention. So that's a big deal. There's also sort of the need for customization. So some projects you know, people really have a lot of desire to see them customized. Like, you know, you really want it to behave in a particular way. Okay. So calculator doesn't really need that much customization.
Hmm.
Right? There's not a huge demand that people have for, I want to change my graphical calculator program.
Base nine.
Yeah. Whereas telephony is something where, you know, if you've ever had to go through having your phone system changed out, it drives people crazy when something changes about the phone system. Even something like how you access your speed dial, right? So there's an incredible demand for customization in telecom. People really want those systems to behave exactly the way they want them to behave.
Okay, so this makes a lot of sense. I mean, people are scratching their own itch. They've got to have a market. It helps to have developers interested in the project because they can further the project along. Asterisk fits in every regard, by the way.
Yeah, in fact, Asterisk really hit it. But again, I didn't really realize that when I made Asterisk open source. It's sort of after the fact that we can look back and say, oh, well, that's why it was so successful.
Right. That's usually the case. I could tell you exactly why what I did didn't work afterwards.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or did work.
In this case, why what I did
did work.
Work,
right.
Experience is what you get when you don't get what you wanted.
Yeah, yeah.
How much of Asterisk is stuff that you and your core team developed versus stuff that was contributed through some sort of vetted process?
Okay. It's hard to really divide it up so easily because it's rare that you just get a patch in and that patch is absolutely perfect and you can just dump it in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when someone gives a patch and then you got to kind of edit it a little bit or maybe you go back and forth with them, it's hard to exactly assign it. But I think we'd estimate that right around half of what we get is from outside.
Wow.
And about half of what we get is from inside of Digium. In fact, the largest engineering group at Digium is the one that is 100% dedicated to open source development.
Wow. So what kind of software do you do that's not open source and why?
That's dedicated to open source Asterisk development, I should say, versus, as example, DADI or the drivers for the interface cards or stuff like that. We do also have – we acquired a company called Switchbox that has essentially sort of a packaging of Asterisk that's sold to small businesses. And that product is a really kind of a proprietary wrapper around Asterisk. And we've been moving some technologies from this sort of demon that lives outside of Asterisk into Asterisk as a way to try to help get some of that technology into open source. But mm-hmm. that product is largely not open source.
Let's talk a little bit about what Asterisk can do. And this is a very big subject because, as you said, it can really pretty much do anything. But it is, would you call it middleware between your phone system and the outside world? Or?
Well, I guess it kind of has two separate lives in that Asterisk can be a standalone application. In other words, if you're building a PBX, you really don't have to have something other than Asterisk. But
it's the whole thing. It could be the whole thing.
It could be the whole thing.
You would need an input and an output.
Yeah, you need your interface cards, right? Or SIP connections or whatever. But you could just install Asterisk, edit all the config files by hand, and get it up and running as a PBX. And if you were using all IP phones and SIP trunks, you wouldn't need to buy any hardware or anything. So you could just set it up and configure it and run it as a PBX.
A SIP trunk is going out over your existing broadband. An IP
right.
phone would be something like Gizmo. It'd be just some software that you're...
Or it could be a hard IP.
Could
like
be hardware.
A Polycom or something
right.
like that.
Okay.
All right. So you can do it that way. And it can completely live by itself and do something useful. So it's not exactly like a database where, you know, your database really doesn't do anything useful
right.
by itself
right.
as an application.
So it's not middleware in that sense. It's an application.
It's not. But on the other hand, some of the most interesting stuff is what people are building by layering other applications on top of Asterisk.
Mm.
So now merging Asterisk with kind of other sorts of technologies or ideas or applications that they're developing in all kinds of other languages. So one of the classic examples there is like Botanicals, right, which has these special sensors they put in plants that use wireless to talk to your Astra server, and then when the plants get too low on water, then they call you through Asterisk, and you know, you get this sort of personalized plant telling you, hey, you need to have somebody water me.
Feed me, feed me.
Yes. And in fact, they all feed have different voices based on the kind of plant they are. It's really pretty.
You're not pretty joking. Fun. This is serious.
No. I'm serious. You can Google it if you want. There's
Wow, that's great.
Yeah. Then you've got
so ET phoning home was nothing. You know, you can get you can get Rutabaga phone home. Wow.
Got iPlate You, which is a system where you can leave messages for people based on their license plates. So
wait a minute,
and then check. Obviously,
you can leave messages for people based on their license plates.
Yeah, and then you can call and check for your license plate what messages people.
Oh, that's clever. I like that. Does that live on the web, or does that? It's
you call into it.
It's a phone, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Nice.
And then,
I play you. So that's if you fall in love with somebody driving down the highway, you could call their license plate.
Exactly. Or if somebody cuts you off, you could, you know.
Oh, that's exactly. Really interesting. How many plates do they have on there? Do you know?
I have no idea, to be perfectly honest with you.
What a funny idea.
I mean, a lot of these projects. What's interesting, actually, is a lot of these projects came out of a group called the Interactive Telecommunications Program at New York University.
Oh, neat. Mm.
And these guys have just come up with so many different applications of Asterisk. And sometimes application is maybe a little bit of a stretch. So, for example, they have this thing that's kind of like a murder mystery that you hear through phones. So it's in the Canal Street stations, and you go in the Canal Street station, which is, I guess, a big station in New York.
New York, yeah.
And at the different payphones, you call this number, and based on which payphone you're calling from, it tells you part of the story of what's going on based on what you're going to see around you. So you're kind of in the middle of it. And I don't know if you can call that an application, but it's certainly a very clever thing to do. There's something called Rap Happy where you can record rap music from your phone and have it uploaded automatically online. All kinds of applications. There's one called the Popularity Dialer.
Okay.
Where you basically select one of five different half conversations and a time to call, and then it'll call your phone and it'll play one of these conversations. So you have the cousin needs help call, for example. So it's your cousin calling and desperately needs your help. And even if you're on speaker or someone's listening to you, like it's a real conversation and you can use it to kind of get out of a situation you don't want to be in.
Wow.
And then you've also got the original popularity call, which is like your friends calling wanting to hang out, but maybe you're on a date and you want to impress the person you're on a date with. And so you have this call and you're saying, no, sorry, guys, I really can't make it. And, you know, I'm on this wonderful date. And you know, it can be very impressive.
Mm, wow.
It sounds kind of a little bit – some of these applications sound a little bit like Grand Central, the Google acquired.
It is my understanding that Grand Central also uses Asterisk, but I don't know the details of it.
They're not saying if it does.
I don't recall if it was from them or from somebody else, but someone I remember told me that Grand Central does use Asterisk on them.
Well, it would make sense for them because after all, it scales well. You've got something that can be, you know, one box or 1,000 boxes, and from what
exactly.
I understand, this thing can all, you know, like different instances of this can talk back and forth to each other to kind of synchronize what's going on and stuff, right?
Yeah, it's just how you build out the network. So it's a lot like, you know, RAID is. You just build it out so there's no central point of failure.
So really any application that involves sort of the crossover between people talking on a phone or a voice system of some kind and some sort of computing agent acting on that could really be implemented using Asterisk as a basic framework then.
Exactly. And that's sort of the new thing that people do with Asterisk. Where it is, again, Asterisk being combined with other software to provide some kind of new purpose. There is a setup so that you can call and talk to your Your Congress people leave them a message, you know, in support of whatever cause. In fact, it's, I think it's called the cause dialer, that does that. There's, also booty dialer, where you upload your booty call list and it calls everyone on there. And then whoever responds favorably first, they get bridged over to you. And you don't have to wait and actually call all those people. You can just have it connect whoever's the first caller.
There's a guy who really had an itch to scratch. Scratching his own. Yeah. Right. So is there an inner process or inner asterisk protocol that you guys created? Do you use a standard protocol for communications between instances?
You can do it with SIP. You can do it with IEX, which is the native one. You can do it however you want to.
You guys are just kings of flexibility. You don't.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very much like the Perl motto. There's more than one way
right,
to do it.
Right.
Which, by the way, is a great motto for software. Incidentally, it is an awful motto for protocol.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Protocols have to have one way to do it. One way only. Yeah.
So in SIP, as an example, there are at least 4 different ways that you can send DTMF.
Wow.
That are all completely different.
DTMF for the dial tones.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the kind of, you know, those are the kinds of things that just absolutely drive me nuts as an implementer, because, you know, people say, well, DTMF isn't working. Well, you know, what system is your provider using? What are you using? And it's just, ugh.
The IAX protocol, the SIP protocols, both of these are signaling protocols. The idea is this is how you get a hold of another phone, right?
Right. And then the media goes a different route. So one of the things we did with IAX is we put the media and the control in the same path, so that if you get the control, you get the media and you don't have to worry.
That's clever.
So they can't be separated, but they can be separated only in a supervised way that makes sure that the media is really getting through in a more direct way if it's not a direct path already.
So that'd be more friendly, say, to say firewalls and stuff. So you don't set up extra ports and stuff,
right.
All that stuff.
Open one connection and that connection persists.
Very cool.
Right.
Use a variety of codecs as well.
That's right. I mean, we'll just pass whichever codec people want to use, and we do have the capability to transcode from one codec to another.
Oh, really?
So.
Oh, wow.
I want to explain what a codec is for those of us.
A codec is essentially a way of representing the same voice data. Typically, they are lossy compression of the audio.
One of the reasons we use Skype, and I would love to use an open source open VoIP client, but one of the reasons you use Skype is that whatever compression they're using is very effective, and the audio quality is just superb.
Well, this gets back to one of the differences of running across the internet versus running across the public telephone network. Is the public telephone network was built around 8,000 hertz sampling rate, and that is absolutely embedded in right. everything that's out there. All of the switched telephony stuff operates at this 8 kilohertz sampling rate, and so anytime it touches the PSTN, it has to go down. Kilohertz.
I can turn you to 8 kilohertz by just turning down the high ends and the low ends. And it's all at 8 kilohertz, and it sounds like a phone call.
Yeah, exactly. But that's, you know, I guess people are used to that. But, you know, at some point, someone sort of realized, well, when we're doing voice across the internet and we're not touching the PSTN, we could actually make it sound nice.
Right.
And so that's one of the things.
Not using that much more bandwidth either. That's the amazing thing.
Well, I mean, it's typically going to use twice as much bandwidth, but
that's still, you
know,
nothing.
If you're sitting here on a 1.5, you know, megabit connection,
right? 16K is not going to kill you.
That concerned about whether you're running at, you know, using 32K of bandwidth or 64K or any of those.
Right. So, what protocols give you the best audio quality on the asterisk you can use?
Well, your audio quality is rarely driven by the protocol. It's typically driven by the choice of codec, and it's driven by the quality of the network underneath
it. Right. So, can I use AAC, MP3, Level 2? Can I use these kind of high fidelity codecs?
The trouble with most of those,
latency.
It has to do, yes, exactly, with the latency and having very lengthy windows of time that they encode. So people oftentimes think of voice over IP latency as the network delay, but that's only part of the story. There's also latency just associated with packetization. So in the circuit switched model, you know, you're building the circuit and there's very little time from when it starts at one endpoint and gets to the other. But when you start packetizing it, there's delay introduced because if you have a 20 millisecond packet, you have to record 20 milliseconds of audio before you can send it over to the other side to get mm-hmm. played back. And so you're necessarily always going to have at least 20 milliseconds of delay when you do that. And the smaller the delay, the smaller the packetization, obviously the less delay you have, but also the more overhead you have associated with the IP headers. In fact, if you look at most voice over IP calls, the vast majority of the bandwidth is consumed not by the underlying audio, but by the IP headers that go above it. Wow. It's the encapsulation around the audio.
But if you have the right kind of protocol, then it keeps it low. So like whatever protocol Skype must be using, it seems to give a very big pipe, I guess, much more than a voice call. Are there open codecs that do roughly the same thing?
Well, these mainly, if you only have one call, it's kind of hard to get rid of it. It's pretty much a trade-off. But when you start having lots of calls going between one endpoint and another, then you can do some things to cut back on that bandwidth. People mm-hmm. don't typically do that with SIP, but with IX, for example, we have a trunk mode that can allow you to triple the number of calls per megabit when you're using G729 codec, for example, as you can get with SIP.
Wow. Okay. So there are ways to get really clean calls if you're aggregating at some point.
Or at least to more efficiently utilize the bandwidth. Again, it's really, if you've got, you know, huge pipes that you're sending few calls over, then you know, none of this stuff really matters. It really gets to be an issue otherwise.
Are there a lot of Astros installations that are internal, or are they mostly outward facing?
I would say most Asterisk installations have limited exposure to the outside world. They're typically in businesses, and so they're going to be opened up to the outside world for the purpose of getting their SIP trunks in or having people with handsets that are mobile, other than obviously internet telephony service providers.
Okay.
But that's because people expect to, you know, if you have a phone service that you can call it over a phone as opposed to just over voice over IP. And, you know, it's just a little different. There are, you know, the most popular clients out there are almost certainly going to be Skype in terms of actual number of the deployments. And and so it's not like you're going to have a SIP address that lots of people are going to think of to call, and people are going to have a SIP client to call you with very often.
Yeah. What's the biggest installation you're aware of Asterisk?
That's hard to say. I can tell you that we have one customer that specializes in building systems for carriers, and one of their carriers has a customer with like 150,000 endpoints.
Wow.
It can be huge. It really can be huge. It's completely dependent upon the installation and how you want to set it up and what are the call volumes and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of times you combine
by endpoint, by endpoints, you don't mean, you mean like phones or whatever, rather than actual running copies of Asterisk.
It can be phones. Yeah. Not running copies of Asterisk. It could be phones. It could be customers who are connecting over some kind of soft client or anything like that.
How many instances of Asterisk would you need? Or I guess the other way around is how many inputs can each instance handle typically?
Well, this is a bit like asking how long is a piece of string. It's a very difficult question to answer because there's so many variables that are involved.
Right.
So if you're not doing any transcoding and you're not carrying any audio, man, you can get lots and lots of calls. As soon as you start carrying audio, it's going to come down a little bit.
Right.
If you have to start transcoding and it's going to start to come down some more. And, you know, if you're doing conferencing and transcoding, well, now you're, you know, increasing the load. So it's typically is CPU bound more than anything else.
Right.
The other thing is that some people in some of the largest installations will use another product called OpenSir, which is a SIP proxy, to be able to connect different Astra servers together in a very lightweight way to get the scalability better.
Early in the call, you said something about asterisk, and you said, of course, that's the thing for everything. I just wanted you to explain that. I know what it means, but just for the audience, what do you mean by it?
Well, anyone that's used Linux or DOS knows that the
I get it.
Asterisk key is sort of the everything,
It's the wild card.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Oh, and that's where the name comes from.
Yes, and then it was sort of handy that it also happened to be on the phone.
Yeah, very clever. Now, there are ways and ways to install Asterisk. You've got TrixBox, or what do you call it? Is it still called TrixBox?
Actually, we have a product called Asterisk Now, which is sort of a single download, includes the OS and everything.
Oh, it's everything. So it's a big ball that has... What, and the OS is Linux of some kind? What kind of...
It's Linux, right. So that's a sort of easy way to download and get started. If you're wanting Asterisk that you're going to get in under the hood. We also have a free version of the SwitchFox product, which is available for download. If you are looking for a small business PBX, that could be a good spot to start from in terms of it has a few more features. It's a little more easily configurable because it's really wrapped up to be a small business PBX. If you are an Asterisk geek like me, you probably won't want to run SwitchFox because you're going to want to get in under the covers and tweak things and change things. And it's really not intended for that. It's intended to be a supportable SMB PBX rather than a platform that you develop on, even though it does have some development capabilities.
And so TrixBox or which was Asterisk at Home, those are all other people's doing roll-ups of your product.
That's right. And there are tons of those.
Lots of those.
Yeah.
So let's focus on yours. What is involved? I get a beige box PC, download. What is it called? The quick install?
Asterisk Now.
Asterisk Now. I download Asterisk Now.
Yeah. So if you want, you can get Asterisk Now and run it on any old PC that you want to run it on, and you can use either IP trunks or you can use Digium cards that you can drop in it to connect up to the PSTN. And sort of the same thing with SwitchFox too.
So these are like PCI cards. I put in the beige box. They connect to my phone network, and that's how I'm getting to the outside world.
Exactly.
There may be also a card that has Ethernet on it that goes to my high speed internet as well.
You presumably already have an Ethernet card.
Oh yeah, that would be called a network interface card. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't need anything special then.
You don't need anything special. In fact, the vast majority of Asterisk users don't need any specialized hardware.
They don't even get the PSTN card, the card that goes to the phone network.
Right. That's really for, when you want to connect to PSTN.
Right.
Or you're just feeling generous and want to support Asterisk, so you buy stuff from us. But
you also sell hardware SIP phones. You also you have a variety of hardware that can go with this.
We do have a variety of hardware that can go with it, and we also sell appliances that have everything kind of bundled all up together.
Oh, that's nice.
In a pre-test package.
That would be like buying a PBX from AT&T. I just roll it in and plug it in.
Exactly.
Oh, that's nice.
And we sell those both with supported Asterisk and the SwitchFox version, which has some pretty fancy Web 2.0 integration stuff in it as well.
Now, you know, cloud computing is starting to take over, and I think a lot of people who want to do Asterisk-like things end up, as frankly, I am embarrassed to admit, Mark, as I did, go to a web-based service provider. I use Got Vmail, and they basically provide all those things. I bet you many of them use Asterisk, though.
Yes, and both Asterisk and SwitchFox are available in both hosted and not hosted versions.
So the cloud, so moving to the cloud doesn't hurt you at all.
Not really. I mean, we have one thing that's kind of special that is SwitchFox has both a hosted and non-hosted model, and you can transition between the two. So you can start in a hosted model where your SwitchFox lives in the cloud, and then it just sort of can transition into a premise-based product when you need that. Because there are definitely drawbacks associated with a hosted model.
Why would I? Yeah. Okay. So I've got my hosted model. I've got everything configured and set up. Now, why might I want to move to a hardware model in my office?
Okay. Well, first of all, now your phone network is completely dependent upon not only the availability of the person that's doing your hosting, but also on the network that's in between.
Right.
And that means if you lose your internet connection, as an example, then you may not even have station-to-station calls. You may be literally completely unable to do anything with your phones. There are 911 issues. There are issues which, if you're a small business, that may be fine. You may be able to deal with that problem. But, if you're a 200-person enterprise, you're not going to want to have all your eggs in that basket.
The phones are down.
Exactly. Yeah. It'd be like the website is down all over again.
Yes.
And I've lived that one. But fortunately, you don't have to worry about Laszlo in the basement. So,
that's right.
So you have the hardware here. You can use the PSTN, which is, let's face it, frankly, more reliable than the internet right now.
Yeah, and, as well it should be.
It was built to be that way.
It was built to be that way, that's right. And it was built on much more fundamental principles, frankly.
Right.
But obviously not as feature-rich. Right. I mean, when was the last time that you bought a phone and at Walmart and took it home and it was incompatible with your phone line, that thing that just doesn't really happen.
Not anymore.
Well, you don't have pulse dial anymore?
Yeah.
I bet, Asterisk supports pulse dial.
It does support pulse dial, as a matter of fact.
Well, the hardware would have to,
But no, you said you could generate DTMF. Can you generate pulse as well?
We can also generate pulse on our cards.
You don't even need a phone that'll do it.
Interface cards. Generate and receive pulse dialing as well as DTMF.
Wow.
As well as MF.
Which is good. Because that opens up.
Revision 2, which is used in South America and some parts of China.
So I was going to say,
as well as PRI,
you've got a market.
As well as basic radio stand, as well as SS7. I mean, I can go on and on.
Wow, that's amazing.
We can have a protocol party.
That's really cool. I love that you're so protocol agnostic and you just say, we're going to work with everything. Do those typically get written by end users?
It depends on the protocol. Some of them, like JIRA 303, you have to buy the standards. And so that typically ends up coming back to us, and your PRI stacks really need to be certified, and those are things that Digium can do.
Right.
So those are all things that we do to help out the project, and so a lot of that stuff is developed in house. But the beauty of it is that every time you bring a new protocol, so for example, when we added Google Talk for the first time, we were able to have a conference call. That literally the day that we had Google Talk working, we had a conference call that had two people calling in over Google Talk, someone over SIP, someone over an analog port, and someone over PRI, all in the same conference bridge the moment it came together. And, likewise, if one day there's a Skype support for Asterisk, then all the other technologies will all just play into it, and you can have everything accessible. You could bridge them together. You could have your voicemail or conferencing or anything.
It's interesting how many hobbyists, how many end users who are not running businesses really wouldn't have any call for a PBX. Nevertheless, set up and run and love Asterisk. There's something that attracts the tinkerer as well.
Yeah, and it's interesting just the variety of people. So I told you a little bit about the ITP people. One of the things that's really interesting about that is those people are not engineers. That whole division is actually out of the art department.
Oh, you're kidding. It makes sense now. Yeah, of course it does. They're all
they're all artists.
Installations, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. What license is Asterisk under?
It's actually dual license, so it's GPL, or you can actually buy a commercial license as well.
GPL 2 or 3?
2.
And why the commercial?
How did you choose that?
Yeah, why the commercial? Oh. Well, okay, go ahead. First, why did you choose that?
We chose GPL 2. It wasn't the perfect license from what I wanted to do, but it was well understood by everybody and just seemed like the right thing to do. In terms of licensing and in terms of, is the question, why are we not GPL3 or just why GPL?
Why GPL instead of any of the other, what was your decision process? What else did you consider?
Well, the way I looked at it is there are certain technologies that are just not going to be open source. As an example, G729 is proprietary. It's got all kinds of patents all around it. It's just never going to happen. and in an open source way. And so we wanted to provide a way that you could use Asterisk in both a proprietary fashion and in an open source fashion. But instead of just doing something like making an LGPL, we wanted to make it where there was an economic reason that you ought to choose the open source route. So if you do decide that you want to link your proprietary application with Asterisk, we want you to have to pay for that, because we want you to be encouraged to make it open source. And then we can use the money that we receive from that to be able to help further the open source development.
This is a really interesting marriage of commercial and non-commercial. I mean, it seems like you've really done it right. It seems to be working very well.
Well, if you look at it, you started out with open source projects. Then people said, well, we can build a nonprofit entity around it that can help provide some structure and some benefit for the project. And now what we're doing with Digium is saying, well, not only that, but look, if you put a for-profit company in parallel with the project, that for-profit company can generate cash, not by begging for it, but by selling useful products that can help drive the open source project further ahead. And as long as you stick to your guns on the nature of the open source project and you say, this project is open source, it's always going to be open source, then you provide an incredible amount of benefit for the community as well.
It's very cool. I think it's been a huge success, and it sounds like you're well positioned to go forward and continue. How many people work on Asterisk within Digium and within the outside world, among the outside world?
Digium's about 150 people total.
Wow, that's incredible.
In the company, I'm sorry. I mean, actual developers on Asterisk, that's probably about 10% of those people, about 10% of our employees are dedicated to open source Asterisk development.
Wow, that's amazing.
So it's a lot. Like I said, it's a huge group of engineering that is dedicated to that purpose. You know, that's just a big part of what we do is, you know, we want to see Asterisk be successful. And that's, you know, we're really driven to try to make that happen.
Wow.
Well, I thank you so much, Mark, for taking some time to talk to us about Asterisk. I know that there are a lot of people out there who have questions, and I probably left out a lot of stuff. We probably didn't, you know, I have a lot of personal questions about what I would and what would be involved in setting up. I've wanted to do this for about 4 years, setting up an Asterisk server for the business. It just seems like a fun project. I know they did it on system, on Revision 3, and a lot of people are really, really interested in this whole idea.
It can be as easy as just opening up a box, of course.
Right.
If you want it to be that easy, or if you want to really put it together yourself, you can do that too.
Very cool. I think I might do that. How much would it cost, say, for a small office for the kind of all pre-rolled, everything by the box kind of thing?
You know, I hate to admit this, but I honestly
no idea. No, I like that about you, Mark.
He's what the list price is.
He's not a salesman. He has no idea.
He gets them free. Come on.
Yeah.
Call the sales department. Yeah.
They can definitely get you in touch with the reseller.
That's why I love Mark. I love it. So you have resellers also in the area who come in and configure and get it going?
Yeah. That's pretty common.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us and talk a little bit about what is clearly one of the most successful open source projects out there on a lot of different levels. Very popular. You mentioned some pretty big installations that are using it.
Yeah, and you know, it's just really stunning. I mean, I think the most bizarre thing is when you call into something and you realize it's Asterisk without really knowing it. Like the other day when I had to call about my hotel room and I got put on hold and there it's Asterisk. I'm thinking, man, I just made the software that I'm now listening
behind me. You can tell. So you can tell.
Is it,
you can
why
tell.
Why did I put a back door?
How do you? Yeah, really. This is the Mark Spencer number.
What? You know, actually, one of the things that was really funny, one of the projects out of ITP was this thing called Q Games. And the idea was instead of just getting hold music, you would answer trivia questions. And if you get the questions right, then you move ahead in the queue. And if you get them wrong, you move back in the queue.
Oh, that's great.
Of course, it'd be good to just have a back door that you could just push the right sequence of buttons to get moved to the front of the queue.
Exactly, yeah.
That'd be even better.
But you know, the whole thing about open source is that Easter eggs like that can be pretty challenging to implement.
Thank goodness. we certainly don't want to give the impression that such Easter eggs may, in fact, exist.
That's right.
At no time.
They would get discovered really quickly.
Yes. Everyone try dialing *12495 now. Let's see
if it works.
It's
all in the code. You can see it all. Nothing is hidden. All right. Hey, Mark, thank you so much.
Thanks, Mark.
Really appreciate your time. It's great to talk to you again. Take care.
Leo, it's great to talk to you, too.
Yeah.
And, thanks, Randall.
Thanks.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Mark Spencer. He's such a nice guy. I had breakfast with him. I guess I forgot to mention this to you, Randall. In Toronto, three or four years ago, we were doing Call for Help. And he's just unassuming and nice. And yet, really, I mean, look at the guy did Game. And now he's doing this. I mean, he's really got a hell of a track record as an open source project creator. More than developer, project creator.
Yeah. Once again, this is an example of how open source really works, though. I mean, we have a person who is solving first their own problems, whatever's right in front of them, and having some idea that maybe people beyond them might also have similar problems. And by keeping it open source, you get to expand who can make modifications to it, who can bring it up. And I mean, and to go all the way to a company, I think that I read somewhere like $10, $12 million in revenue with 150 people. That's incredible.
Really, it's really a neat story.
Just an incredible thing. Yeah. And also, as he is referred to there, that being able to take the commercial side, the hardware sales, the training, everything on top of the open source part of it, and using that to fund more open source software is also incredible, because we have this perfect marriage then. And everybody that just wants a soft solution of being able to download something and maybe, you know, tinkering with it a bit themselves, being able to install something. I mean, I'm surprised it's not like last week where now you've downloaded Asterisk while we were talking and set up your own system. You probably had a hesitation there that maybe you would do that.
Well, so. I'll tell you the truth. I had this all set up. And Mark had very kindly sent me a couple of SIP phones and the PSTN interface. And I had a computer, and it was about 3 years ago. And at the same time, I was kind of starting Twit, and I never got around to it. Patrick Norton came up and he said, "Are you going to use that?" I said, "No." And so that's the one he used to install it on system. And I keep asking every time I see Patrick, I said, "Patrick, are you done with that Asterisk?" And by now it's like, well, forget it. It's, you know, three years old. I'll get a new one.
There you go.
But I've been planning to do this for a long time. It's just, you know, it's what I tell you, many of these distributions like Asterisk now, but there are many other third-party roll-ups have the operating system, have Asterisk, have everything done. It's just an image. You put it on a hard drive, you plug in the machine, and you're done. The trick is, and I printed out the Asterisk manual. Somewhere I have a notebook with the Asterisk manual, and it's well documented, but there's enough in there that I thought, maybe I'll put this off a little bit longer.
Well, so based on the track record then of last week and this week, what else do you need installed in the Twit cottage?
Yeah, really, from now on, every interview. Well, let's talk a little bit about Laconica, because that has been a fantastic success story. Now, last week we talked to Evan Prodromo, who is the creator of the open source Twitter clone, the kind of the canonical open source Twitter clone, Laconica. He ran Identica, and I started the install that day while we were on the air, finished my first version that night. I kind of felt some pressure because we recorded on Wednesday, and I wanted to have it up by the time the show aired on Friday. deleted the entire database by accident on Thursday, re-downloaded everything from Darks, so I had to complete the latest version late, about 3:30 in the morning Thursday, and I had it up and running again, and it's been running. Had some bugs that I saw, you know, here and there and so forth, but it's been running flawlessly. And you're on it. I know army.twit.tv. It's really been a great success. And we have well over 2,000 users right now, which makes it the second largest Laconica installation in the world.
Yeah. I've been talking to the developers in the Laconica channel, and they say, yes, it's great because here's Leo sort of stress testing our software finally.
If this idiot can install it, anybody can. But, you know, what's great is there is a community, and Zach, who's one of the authors of the program, Evan has been really great. Ken Shepherdson has been really great. Dustin Sollings there. So there's this great community around it. And it's been, you know, I mean, it's early days on this. This is a 2-month-old open source project. Asterisk is what? How old? 5-6 years? It's been around a long time.
It should be a little simpler for you to install when you finally get around.
I think I can. It'll be a little more. There'll be instructions for one thing. Installing Laconica was so much fun. It brings me back to the good old days of hacking around in a server. And I only brought Twit down 4 or 5 times. It wasn't too
well. And I've been watching it for the last week, playing with this thing too. It's like every time I get on, it's like, oh, I'm going to do this to the database now. And then you were typing SQL the other day, and it was like, oh my god, yes. What have we got into? This is crazy.
Oh, it's fun. And I'm not a PHP programmer, although because I've done a lot of C programming, it's pretty familiar to me. I can figure out what's going on. And I'm definitely not a MySQL guy. Although having over the years had to do my own little selects once in a while, I've started to kind of pick it up. It is non-trivial, but you know what? I've got a beta version of Twirl now that I've been using, and it works great on it. There's starting to be some desktop client support. XMPP and Track are really starting to take off. I think we're making some progress in the idea of getting this stuff moved to the open source community, away from these proprietary silos. We even did an extended Twit on Sunday with Dustin Sollings of IdentiSpy and Twitter Spy and Stephen Gilmore and John C. Dvorak, kind of dialing in every 3 minutes, and talked about the future of open source microblogging. I'm very excited. I think it's very interesting.
It's definitely very cool. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. And also the Twitter connection, too. There was something. Somebody's got a gateway now for that.
Yeah, Ken Shepherdson. Actually, a couple of people have, but I've been using Ken's. I actually stopped because people started yelling me at Twitter because I was posting so much on Twit Army. And they were not, and they said, what is all this? We don't want to know about this. So I just turned it off.
Twitter, what, a person Twittering a lot? Come on.
I'm going to reserve Twitter now for, you know, when I need to broadcast to a large audience. But there's a lot to be said for having a community around one of these microblogs. They don't need to be 50,000 people or a million people. They just need to be the people that you want to talk to. And that's what's really powerful about this. And that's what I love. I tell you. You know, I love open source. I just really love the idea of the community that's around it. People are very helpful. The idea that you can bang on this software yourself, you know, doesn't come as a big binary that you have no access into.
And you know, a lot of people have been requesting this show. Like I say, I'm always looking for new input on what shows to do in the future. That Merlin@stonehenge.com, Merlyn, go ahead and send suggestions to me. But Asterisk must have been suggested by about 20 people, so I'm really happy to have gotten this into the queue now. And, it's fascinating when you can bring these kinds of like fundamental projects to the forefront. I mean, there's probably now, you know, another few hundred or a few thousand at least people who now know about Asterisk that didn't know that before the beginning of the show. And I'm really happy to have this forum to be bringing these interesting, useful projects. And talking to these pioneers, these people that are really bringing things to the forefront. It's been a lot of fun.
I love supporting this. And Asterisk is a really neat example because here's something, you know, that has kind of the business model around it, kind of like MySQL or, you know, one of the big, or Apache, but the big open source projects. And yet, unlike a lot of these other programs, end users, single guys are installing it and playing with it and hacking around with it. It's kind of got both sides of the spectrum. And I just think it's really, really a wonderful project. Glad we could talk about it.
And speaking of future projects or future shows, actually, that are lining up themselves up, actually not lining themselves up, we're doing a lot of work behind the scenes to make this happen. But we just got an agreement from the creator, I don't have his name, Richard something, the creator of Audacity.
Oh, wow.
Has just agreed. He's kind of come out of hiding because he's no longer on the project. But he created it back in the early days. And Richard Crinadin, I think his name, we're probably mispronouncing that. Sorry, Richard, if you're listening. He's agreed. We're just looking for the slot. It might be next week. It might be a few weeks from now, but we'll get him on the show. We also have tentative agreements from Simon Phipps, the Floss evangelist at Sun, to talk about the overall Floss strategy. We also have Ken Kaur of the Apache Software Foundation. Those are all on the short queue. Oh, and the creator of Wine, the Windows emulator for Linux. So those are all in the queue, just waiting for slots to put them all in. And so we got some really great shows coming up, lined up soon.
That's tremendously exciting. Thank you for reviving this show and really
weekly,
not only making it weekly, but really making it live up to the vision, which was to get the most interesting people working on the most interesting projects on the air. And we've had some fun with it. So we'll talk again next week, Randall Schwartz.
See you
then. We thank everybody for joining us on Floss Weekly.